Okay. I hope you all had a good cup of coffee or a good cup of tea and a biscuit. I think I had the very last one, or two. Okay. Our visitors get two biscuits. Oh. Conversation sometimes is more important. So we're now going to hear from Marius Venter, who is head of network planning at Sentec. Sentec is the South African signal distributor who's been very involved in the trials that have taken place, and have also supported this particular day as part of Radio Days Africa, and has been a good partner of ours in enabling this focus on the digital broadcasting world. So, over to you, Marius.
Thanks, Frank. So, I'll try and keep it short. I know the time is 120 slides. I'll try and knock it out in a few minutes. No, so I'm just going to quickly, try and be quick, give a bit of an overview of the South African trial, what we did, what we found, hopefully not go into too much detail there. So maybe starting off with those who don't know us, Sentec is we're the national signal distributor for radio and television services, for all three spheres of broadcasters, with over 150 radio stations on a daily basis. Our infrastructure and data communication platforms, we also provide services to the telecoms infrastructure, to the telecoms sector and the mobile operators. And we're really focused on, focused on rolling out the platforms that'll enrich digital content distribution and access to digital content in future. We have completed the network rollout for digital television on terrestrial and satellite platforms. And I think as was mentioned, we see ourselves as the network partner for digital radio future. Going into DAB Plus, you can't see the headings. That's unfortunate. But anyway, so these are just some of the main features. I think it's maybe a bit small, and some of it might have been mentioned earlier today. All the good things that we see in DAB Plus that DAB Plus can offer. Some of the key things to maybe highlight that we found. Specifically as on the dynamic reconfiguration of the DAB MUX in terms of the flexibility that you have of introducing new services and running at a different bit rates, different services in different areas. That's one of the key benefits that we see. And then obviously we also see that digital radio, DAB Plus specifically, has got there is a hybrid future there in terms of the integration between digital radio as a broadcast platform and also some of the IP-based content. You've probably seen the smartphone, the one of the first smartphones with DAB Plus on board, and a lot of those capabilities are then obviously enabled with some of the apps on the smartphone. Getting into the trial, the challenges that we were facing, that we currently facing still in the industry is, and I think it's for most countries around the world, where you've got severe FM spectrum congestion, especially in the more urban and the higher population areas, where you see that the demand for spectrum, the number of broadcasters that would want to be on FM, that demand is far greater than the supply for spectrum in those areas. And there's also a requirement from a consumer perspective for better services and more value-added services. In terms of the spectrum situation, we currently have, because we've got analog television services still on air in all the metro areas, there's a small part of spectrum in the VHF band, the right at the top of the DAB Plus spectrum band, channel 13F. That's really the frequency that we conducted our trial on. So we in the two trial sites that we ran, we at one of them we had an analog service still at the adjacent lower channel. Proved to be some challenge. We had some challenges there, but we got it right. And then after analog switch off, the national frequency plan has already contains assignments for two DAB plus muxes nationally, and I mean with some additional work we can easily increase that to four. The objectives really of the trial was to investigate really from a technical perspective what is the adequate power that we need on DAB plus, for instance, to replicate our FM services in the metros. For instance, I mean, we've got quite a number of 10 kilowatt FM radio services at these two sites. We've got one 20 kilowatt FM radio service, and so it's large area coverage. And we wanted to find out what we really need to fully replicate that kind of coverage on digital radio. So yeah, as you can see there on the one of the two sites, we've got 21 FM services ranging from 1 to 20 kilowatt. On the Pretoria site, which is the other trial site, we have 14 services ranging from 1 to 10. And the trial was really conducted on these two sites with two 10 kilowatt transmitters. And we then ramped it up and we did some testing at 2 kilowatt, at 5 kilowatt, and at 10 kilowatt. So we wanted to test the SFN operation as well as the effect of cross polarization, because the two sites that we have, on the one site is a horizontally polarized site, the other one is vertical. So there was some interesting things that we wanted to investigate there, and we actually found some interesting things as well. And then in addition to the trial or to the technical or the coverage kind of tests, we were also looking at the audio service quality, building penetration, the mobile performance of, well, both of the technology as in the coverage area, as well as the receivers. How does the receivers and cars perform? So we wanted to really test the entire chain and see get a feel for the technology for the country. So there's just a bit of background on the working group. So there was an industry working group that was formed. We defined a rules of operation, so which basically said how the parties would collaborate, who would be responsible for which costs, and how would the assignment of services on the multiplex, how would it be coordinated. From a standard point of view, we took the strategic decision to invest in the technology, because we believe that this is really the future of radio in the country. So from our side, we funded the most of the network implementation. We also did the RF field measurements and coverage testing, and then the broadcasters that participated also with in terms of the receivers, the studio equipment, and the contribution linking into the head-end system. Moving on to, so where did we start on this journey from a Sendic point of view is really looking at some of the considerations that we were looking at when we were planning the network or planning the trial. They're all listed there, but it talks to what will be the user experience requirements from the technology and on the trial. Where are the sites located? What is the availability of spectrum? What is the policy and regulatory framework look like? So there was quite a few considerations in determining how we would then do this trial. Another key aspect, so I know this is a bit technical, I'll run through it, but we basically, considering that there's always the trade-off between throughput on a digital system and the robustness of the signal, we went for the compromise between the two, which is also the configuration that's deployed in most international markets. And we did go for single frequency network to really test what we can do and what we can find, considering that we've had some experience on DTT as well with SFN operation. We wanted to see what's the possible benefits of that on digital radio. This really is the block diagram really just shows the sort of the layout of the trial, where we had the DAB Plus head end at the Brixton Tower with the transmitter, all the contribution feeds coming in. Then we had a link from the head end to the second site, and these sites were then operating in single frequency network. The trial covered about 11 million people, so it's about 20% of the population. Although it was a closed trial, so it was not a public trial. There was very limited participation from the public itself. It was really just participants in the industry that took part, and then obviously, let's call it related individuals. But yeah, so we on the multiplex, we could put up to 24 stereo channels. There were representation from all three tiers of broadcasting that were part of the two industry bodies that participated, SADEVA and the NAB. And then we also looked at testing on this. We looked at testing all the other data capabilities of the technology. This is just a picture of one of the transmitters. Here's all the technical configuration information if someone's interested. I think the most important part there was that the services that we had on the trial ranged from as low as 40 kilobits up to 96 kilobits in terms of the different bitrate allocations to the different services that we tested. Just moving on to the combiners and the antenna side. For instance, this combiner, it's one of the first in the world for this high power, where we're combining a 10 kilowatt digital radio service together with four other analog services on the same antenna system. So it was quite a unique design. We had some growing pains, but the OEM really came to the party in helping us to resolve those issues. So yeah, there's some significance to this picture. From an antenna side, both of the sites were omnidirectional in terms of their radiation, and important, yes, the one was horizontally polarized, other one vertical, so that was quite interesting as well. This is really basically the coverage of all the different levels that we tested. This is, for instance, at the Johannesburg transmitter site. The three colors that you see is the different coverage that we were looking at from at a 2 kilowatt, a 5 kilowatt, and a 10 kilowatt transmitter power. And the same on the Pretoria side. So it really, this trial covered majority of the Gauteng province. Moving on to just on the measurement methodology. This really, we had 12 different measurement routes all around the province to do different kinds of testing and understand really the performance of this technology in all directions in different terrain areas. So it was all mobile measurements done with a measurement vehicle. Unfortunately, I don't have a picture of it. It was quite an adventure. And we did these measurements both with professional and domestic kind of receivers, and then we also had a big focus also on building penetration of the technology, because one of the big things that especially the commercial broadcasters or the broadcasters that have raised in the Gauteng area is always the fact that there's a lot of shopping malls. And as you go into the parking area, all of a sudden you lose your radio services, or no, you're in an elevator, you don't have radio service. So there's a few possible use cases that we wanted to understand. What what will be the impact, or how good will DAB Plus or digital radio really be? So we had a big focus on those kinds of measurements as well. This is really sort of the measurement system. Some of the we had an aftermarket DAB Plus radio. We actually had a kitchen radio that we were driving around with in the car. We had the in-car adapter, small kind of mobile kind of receivers, and then on that side there was the professional receiving equipment. So yeah, these are all the different receivers that we were using in our mobile measurements. Getting to some of the findings, so there's a lot of information here. I'll try and run through it quickly, and it might be a bit technical, but so I think the first thing that we saw was the benefit of high power transmission as opposed to lower power transmissions. When we went from a 2 kilowatt to a 5 kilowatt, that step up, we did see a significant improvement in the service quality in the coverage area. When we stepped, and then also we saw an improvement in the coverage density. And then when we went from 5 to 10 kilowatt, the major improvement there was the penetration into buildings. And we actually found that up to the edge of coverage, we still realized that improvement. Overall, we had a very good correlation between what we predicted and what we then measured in the field. Most of the domestic receivers actually performed very well. Some of them actually outperformed the professional receiver. The overall performance of end user devices, with both what came fitted in some of the cars, as well as the other receivers that we tested, the performance was actually across the board very good. We also saw and could measure the benefits of a single frequency network, especially in areas where we don't actually have a line of sight kind of coverage. I mean, there was at one point we were doing measurements in the coverage area of the Pretoria site, and we were expecting that. I mean, it was as far as we knew, both transmitters were on, and we weren't really surprised by the performance. And then we actually got a call, and we realized that the Pretoria transmitter, in which coverage area we were. That transmitter was actually off, and we were still receiving a clear signal. And when we actually analyzed it afterwards, that part of the route was totally obscured from the Johannesburg side. So what we were listening to was basically an amalgamation of reflected signals, and it was fine. We didn't have any breakup, and that was one of the wow moments. It's like, well, this technology is actually quite robust. So yeah, based on our findings, we're really saying that high power transmitters is probably the way to go, and then in certain areas supplemented by low power gap fillers. We did see a significant difference in the performance of the technology in the two polarizations, where vertical performed significantly better. And we actually, another thing that we found on the trials was when comparing what we were measuring against the standards documents, the ETSI standard document, we actually found better performance in terms of decodable signal, as well in terms of the minimum level to have a decodable signal, as well as the number of errors that we can deal with and still have a decodable signal. So that was actually a good realization that the technology was actually performing better than what the standards were saying. On the second phase of the trial, the focus shifted a bit from the coverage and the technology itself, and more in terms of what's the versatility and the quality issues in terms of audio, data services, and a bit more focus on the receivers as well. So we we were, I think as I mentioned before, we were testing bit rates ranging from very low, so it was actually 32, and up to 128 kilobits. So we were testing across a range of various broadcasting genres and a range of bit rates to really understand what kind of content fits what kind of bit rate better. We tested parametric stereo, then also some of the data services, and we really found that the sweet spot was around 64 kilobit for most services. There was one service that we actually ran at a higher bit rate at 80 kilobits, and that was the classic FM, so the classic content channel, where we just felt that the additional bit rate was needed for pure and crisp quality. Then we also on the other end of the scale we saw very good performance from the pop or the talk kind of formats at 32 and 40 kilobits per second. Just touching on some of the learnings from the contribution side, we did see a significant benefit in having a digital path from the studio source, so that it's a digital signal coming out of studio, and you've got a full digital path into the head-end system. There's some findings on the digital codecs as well. The one thing that we did find is that it's actually not recommended to feed the services with a commercial kind of receiver. I mean, some of the stations that was using a DSTV or a satellite television decoder to basically get a commercial the signal off satellite of the satellite platform and feeding it into transmitter chain. Yes, it works in an emergency, but the quality is really not what you would expect. So it's not really not recommended to do that. In terms of some of the other testing that we did, so that was on some of the additional features of the technology on the dynamic labeling, on slideshows. We also tested some scheduling software called Rapid in terms of the scheduling of slideshows, and that really gives some flexibility on the broadcaster side to really make their content unique in terms of the additional content that's offered. This is really just I know it's a bit bad quality. So this is sort of the view of one of the analyzers in terms of all the different services, the quality of the audio coming in. These are, for instance, some of the slideshows that each of the broadcasters were running on their specific channels while we were testing this. This brings us really. I ran through it quite quickly. But what was really some of the key takeaways from this process so far? I think the one thing was when we did the digital radio showcase on the 3rd of May, it was a good event where we were sort of celebrating radio and also showing the future of radio as being digital. We had one of the stations doing a pop-up on the day, and that really just emphasize how easy it is to have a short-term broadcast, reconfigure the mics, put the service on, it was really actually a very good experience. The next thing that we found was very important, and hopefully that will continue as we're looking to go to commercial, was the industry collaboration. I think it was absolutely essential to the success of these trials. No, I don't think any one entity would have been able to realize what we could. That was very important, and it was good to see the industry working together. As a third point, it's just the emphasizing the importance of the broadcasters to explore and invest some of the possibilities that the technology brings. and also do some investment on the studio side, just to ensure that we embrace what the additional features and quality that the platform brings. And the other thing is that the spectrum that we used for the trial, that's actually currently available nationally, and that's really where we're looking to actually try and commercialize this platform, and that's possible even before we actually switch off the analog television services, and that's really what the next thing that we're looking forward to is to see how quickly can we actually commercialize this platform and start realizing the benefits that Jorn spoke about, and see some additional services being offered. That was a mouthful, and that's it for me.
Thanks very much. Sure. There was interest earlier on in the cost side of things. I don't know whether from a Centec point of view you've done any kind of modeling or any kind of estimate of what the cost to the broadcaster might be of, once this platform is up and running.
Yeah. So we've played around with some numbers and also taking from other countries have found. We found a similar kind of indication where you're probably looking at a per service cost probably a tenth or an eighth of the cost from a signal the signal distribution cost to the broadcaster would probably be an eighth or a tenth of the current per service cost. So yes, if you look at the entire multiplex, the technology is more expensive than comparing to FM, but you are running 18, 20 services on that same infrastructure. The indication is probably around an eighth or between an eighth and a tenth of the cost per service to the broadcaster.
Thanks. And earlier, I think it was Lynn who mentioned a low power trial that's going to happen in Cape Town. Can you say something about that?
So currently we. There is that possibility. We're not 100% directly involved in that currently, but that's one of the possibilities that such a trial will happen. We've also from a Centec point of view, we've also looked at, for instance, what the UK did on the small scale DAB, and giving a lot more of the not the power but of the capability to the broadcaster side, and running using some open source software, so exploring some of that, saying, well, how can we make this technology accessible to the community broadcasters, who are generally not that well funded, they don't have that big of the big part of the advertising pie, so we are looking at some of those things as well.
Thank you. Other questions, points? Yes, Hendrik.
How does the signal get from the studio to Centec? Is it also through the DAB Plus, or does it go through online? How does it get there?
No, so there's on the trial we actually had various mechanisms. Some of it used the same kind of technology on FM, a studio to transmitter link, some microwave links, some went through Diginet lines or a fiber connection. So it's basically, currently most of the services were contributed in different ways, and that's actually where we found that if we can keep that part digital, there's a lot better feed coming into the head end. But yeah, on the trial we had different kinds of contribution linking solutions. I think one or two of the services was internet contribution as well.
Hi. My question is along the same lines of your IP feeds to your sites.
Sure.
Now, many of your sites don't have reliable last mile connections over there. Yeah. What is the plan then going forward in order to maintain the service or improve it, if there is one?
Yeah, sure. So I think from a Centec point of view, and that's not just for digital radio, but I mean for our infrastructure in general, we definitely... We've got actually a big project running on that to say, well, how can we get better better quality, better reliability of feeds, specifically IP feeds, into our sites. You're right, most of them are quite remote, and the infrastructure options are, in terms of linking infrastructures, there's not many. But we're actively looking at addressing that to enable IP contribution.
Thanks, Marius, for the presentation. Sure. Am I correct to say that in terms of your strategy as Centec, you are prepared to roll out the infrastructure and then the broadcasters rent the space from you?
Well, yes, that's really the as a network provider, we would be looking at rolling out the network, and it would be the same kind of model as with the other networks that we're doing, where, for instance, we would make the capital investment, and it would, for the broadcast, it would be an OPEX model of saying, yeah.
Okay, I think we're done. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you.